What do happiness etiquette and yoga have in common? Well, I wrote this back in February 3rd, 2016. And this idea came to me when I asked on Facebook page a while ago the same question, what does happiness etiquette and yoga have in common? And then I got a lot of likes, but not answers, which is odd because it's a question, so that was really not responding in any sort of logical way. But hey, so then I said, okay, let me try a different direction. So I asked the question, are you more motivated to do yoga in a studio or at home? Now this got people a little more engaged in a logical way. And the most of the answers could be placed in three categories. One is, well, I got too many distractions at home. The second one was, well, I love and I'm motivated by other people's energy. And then the third one was just simply community, community, community. So really all the answers were totally in favor of practicing at the studio. They all focused on the joy and the energy we get from being surrounded by people. I find this absolutely amazing since yoga is a solitary practice. It's not like yoga is like tennis or soccer or any team sport where we actually play with one another. In yoga, the interaction that we get are simply just the joy of being next to someone. Half the time they may be sweating on you, but apparently this is better than doing things alone. So clearly the community energy is very important to us yogis. And I'm going to venture and say maybe to us humans. So now I'll ask the question again, what do happiness etiquette and yoga have in common? I think the short answer is simply that happiness etiquette and yoga lives in symbiosis with community. That is, community creates the platform of happiness etiquette and yoga. But I'm going to flip this argument and I'm going to say that yoga and etiquette and happiness can also create a community. So let me explain how this could work. I'm going to start with etiquette. I'm going to list out a couple of scenes that we're probably painfully familiar with. So here is number one scenario. You walk into a bank. The person just a few steps ahead of you lets the beast of a heavy door just slam right into your face. Yep. Been there, felt that. Here's another one. You sit down at the dinner table with friends and 5 minutes into your meal, half the table is answering phone messages and browsing the web. Totally my pet peeve, but yep, I've seen it happen. Okay, here's another one. After a late movie, everybody walks to their cars alone in the dark. I'm baffled by this one, but I see this all the time. I mean, I'm not that old, but I don't think it used to be this way. Okay. You host parties at your home, but nobody seems to invite you back. So our lives are full of these experiences. The list could go on. But of course, one could just excuse me of being an old snobbish curmudgeon, and then there is a little bit of truth in that accusation. But at the risk of sounding totally uncool, absolutely out of touch, and very clearly annoying, I will make a case for the importance of etiquette in our life. If you've been reading my earlier blogs, you know that I'm a very opinionated feminist. You may have read my cry out for liberal education or my pledge to erase masculine and feminine symbols from teaching yoga, and the list could go on. So this could be quite surprising to hear that now I express some of the benefits that I find in old-fashioned manners. Yes, I am indeed a more than capable, pretty powerful force of nature to reckon with. But my heart still warms when someone holds the door for me, not out of a need for physical help, but out of a need for connection. And this resonates with some readings that I found through popular psychology, sociology, and philosophy articles recently. there are three concepts that merge here. Vulnerability as strength, reciprocity as social glue, and a need for personal connection for mental health and healthy society. So how does this connect to holding a door? Well, let's see this. So when you allow yourself to be seen, rather than putting our energy towards keeping up appearances, we create the foundation for true connection. It takes tremendous inner strength and courage to show vulnerability. But this is also how we form deep connections with others. When others see your vulnerability, they're more likely to be vulnerable. That's partially reciprocity. But someone's got to make that first step. We actually have to stop our busyness and see each other, listen to each other, and reciprocate each other's kindnesses if we're to live happy, connected lives. So again, please tell me, how in the world does anything to do with etiquette from the vulnerability as strength, reciprocity as glue, and a need for personal connection? So here we go. Hold on. As you see, etiquette has built in reciprocity rules, and reciprocity acts as a social glue. So when you see someone and you hold the door, then you notice that person was about to step into a building too. You looked up out of your own world and took a second to recognize someone else. As a result, that someone else may have smiled at you and say thank you, because it feels good to be seen. This creates a second reaction that the person who held the door actually feels really good about it. So when we sit down at dinner and we wait for everyone to be ready to eat, we recognize where we are in our lives. We take a moment out from our life and wait, and take a moment to be grateful for each other, for the food that was prepared for us. You don't have to be religious to say grace. If you are religious, that's wonderful, say grace. But you could just make eye contact, smile, pause for a second, thank the meal, and say bon appetit. Eat with great appetite. It's gratitude. It is really like the Prozac for your mind. And then you continue eating and talking to each other, not with your phones, and you discover something amazing about each other and start forming deep and lasting connections. So now I'm going to go to that place where, you know, when we leave the movie and everybody just goes to their park. So when you leave a late show and we ask each other where we parked, it indicates that we care. Escorting each other to our cars is more and more important as we live in an ever-growing city. Besides safety, it just lets us know we care for each other. We are here together, and we're willing to take an extra time to make sure that we're okay. I had actually some of my best conversations with good friends as we were walking to each other's car. Because a meeting is more than just a movie, right? Anyway, as for my last point, my parents had really rich social lives because it was considered a cultural norm to invite back those who invited you. Anybody was welcomed into our circle as long as they played the reciprocal game. If somebody broke the rule over and over again, eventually that person was not invited for the next party. This was so deeply embedded in the culture, nobody had to explain it. As a result, though I grew up in an extremely small family, we had a huge network of friends. These invites didn't have to be formal. Bunny slippers and a slice of cake and coffee did the trick, but somebody was over at least twice a week. Twice a week. How often do you see your friends? And before you cry out who has time between kids and work, may I point out that we, American average, browse the web and watch the TV about 2 to 4 hours a day. This time looking at the screen instead of each other. With every little interactions lost, we lose a chance to feel joy, gratitude, and connection. However small these interactions are, they do add up. We live in a society that is more connected technologically than ever before, but much less connected emotionally. I'm going to say this again. We live in a society that is more connected technologically than ever before, but much less connected emotionally. This explains why when I ask on Facebook a question, I get an answer of likes. That's not an answer. That's not an engagement, right? I don't know what that is. Maybe Facebook knows, but it gives no satisfaction, okay? We crave real connection. We crave to be with one another so much so we would prefer to do yoga silently next to each other instead of staying at home. We'd rather deal with traffic, parking, and other people's sweat and the extra fees than to be alone to do something that is a solitary sport. In short, we need one another. Etiquette and yoga allows us to form a community which makes us feel happier. So don't miss out on the small joys of life. Stop, look, listen, and reciprocate kindness and gratitude. Thank you for making the extra effort for coming to Spira to practice yoga. Your energy does add to the happiness of the community. Thank you for your time, and thank you for being who you are. Dora.